Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. On the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name. The echo is haunting. The echo is always the same. I call your name. The echo is haunting. An echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and I'm joined by the illustrious duo and co-host forever, Tom and Melissa Gould. Hello, welcome. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well.
Yes.
As you know, this is the show where we address questions that you have. So if you have a question or you simply wanted to share an experience or talk to us, we'd love to speak with you. The number here is 888-627-6008. Some people have emailed questions in, and we can start with those. Let's see. We have here's a question. You know, my cousin and I were discussing, and we were hoping you might have some insights into the answer, you know, on the radio show. My daughter's energy has been proclaimed to be fairly advanced and a very bright energy. This was from three different mediums over the past 2.5 years. One was an FFF certified medium. She said, of course, I've always believed that. However, I'm sure every proud mother would. My daughter continues to communicate with me in many ways, not just through our regular signs. The question is this: if one is not as fortunate to have the strong connection and develop spirit energy of their love on the other side, how might this impact the people than the physical ability to get communication and the therapeutic outcomes of having a strong connection? You guys want to tackle that?
Well, certainly your situation is preferable to that. The question we get about signs, and I used to get signs, now I'm not getting signs, or the people who haven't gotten signs, is one of the more daunting questions that we have dealt with. And unfortunately, I don't think there's a hard and fast answer for that on why some people get signs and some don't. But of course, if you get a sign and know it's a sign, it's extremely therapeutic. That's as close as I can come to an answer. Do you want to give it a shot?
Well, I just think people often think a sign is something that's really going to wallop them and knock them off their feet. And it can be a lot more subtle than that. I've often said to others when explaining signs, you're either thinking of your loved one in the moment, and then something happens that you can then link to them. You know, you're thinking about them, and suddenly then cardinal or a butterfly comes by, or we hear people saying butterflies land on them. But I think what's cooler is when you're not even thinking anything in particular, just going about your normal day, but then a scent wafts by you, maybe unusual spot, like in your car. Or people often speak about pipe tobacco or cigarette smoke. And then it makes you think of your loved one. And that, to me, is pretty powerful. It's almost like, hey, I'm here with you. Can you tell? And we hear that all the time with people going into a store and their loved one's favorite song is being played on the the broadcast?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, throughout the store, and you just kind of like right place, right time.
And I think, I mean, you know, in the question, she's also, you know, mentioning, you know, develop spirit energy. And I think it is clear that there are some people in the spirit world that are better able to communicate than others. I don't know why that is, but it's true. I mean, you know, we know lots of people who are just overwhelmed by communications from their loved ones and others that don't get it so much. So I think that there is a learning process over there. They are just like it is for mediums on, you know, on this side to get help from others on the other side, perhaps to develop these communication skills. I think it's a mistake when people think that just when we cross over that instantly everybody's able to communicate. But the other point I think was also good that because she recognizes that strong communications do have a therapeutic effect, and that's logical. Why should they not? You know, because it's evidence that your loved one, you know, survives. But as you were both alluding to, I think if you aren't able to get these strong communications, that really has no bearing on the love bond that you have with your loved one on the other side. It's just a matter of fine tuning the process. So you just have to be patient, right?
Yeah. I think Melissa made the great point is that a lot of signs are very subtle. They're not going to blow you over necessarily. So that's one thing to do is to lower your expectations. Another is to know that it's a two-way street, that you want through meditation and raising your vibrations, you can become more susceptible to receiving signs. The problem for the spirit world is how to come to you, because I remember recently reading a story of a woman who lost her husband, and he appeared as an apparition in her bedroom one night, and she screamed and said, don't ever do that again.
Yeah.
You know, so spirit does not want to frighten you. So it's a delicate balance of just how much they can present to you without upsetting you.
And I have to tell you, Bob, Tom and I are sitting here at our home computer and we have a second one alongside it. And while we've been talking, I just had to quiet the screen down because photos were coming up, random photos that are collected in our computer.
Oh, really?
We talked about evolved spirits. Tom's dad's face just came up on the computer screen. And then a few moments later, a photo I must have taken of a cardinal appeared. And it's usually baby pictures of the kids. So that, who knows? That was unusual.
You might be getting some hellos as we speak.
So. Yeah. Well, I quieted them down. So hopefully they'll return.
You know, this was not a question, but I thought it was worth mentioning because we get so many questions about mediumship. And what we find, like in our work, is that most of the general public, although it may seem obvious to us, doesn't really understand, you know, what evidential mediumship is. And we've been noticing this even in our medium evaluation certification process, and I've seen it so much of late, is that some mediums, when they do the reading, they give really accurate psychic information. I mean, they tell the sitter about their personalities and the trouble that they may be having with their family, and a move that they're discussing, and really accurate stuff, but they never in the entire reading tie that information into somebody in spirit. And they don't, and the sitter, even sitters that are trained in this stuff, they think it's a good reading, but you know, we try to explain, you know, that you have to, if the medium is giving you information from spirit, they have to be able to identify who that spirit is, you know. And sometimes there's a catch-all that they use. They say, they're telling me. Well, that's okay, but there could be billions of people. You have to narrow it down. You know, who's telling you? You know, so I'm sure you've found that over the years after witnessing so many readings that a lot of mediums, especially when they don't have a strong connection, revert to the psychic stuff. And lots of times, and how would they know? But a sitter doesn't understand. So I thought that was worth bringing up to people, that if you're getting a medium reading, there's nothing wrong with you saying to the medium, can you tell me who that's coming from? Right. Yeah. You know, it's nice that, yes, I am having a problem, you know, with my sibling, but where are you getting it? You know, so.
I was that way myself. I remember when I first got involved with the foundation and we were doing a medium certification and I was going to be a sitter for it. And it was in a hotel room at the time. And I remember it was Laura Lynn Jackson who came in to do it. And afterwards, I came over to Bob and I said, wow, this Laura Lynn, she's fantastic. Because earlier on in the evening, Melissa and I were talking about what shirt I should wear because we were going to videotape some of this. So I wanted to know what would... And we hardly ever talk about what clothes I'm going to wear, clearly. And I came to Bob. I said, wow, this Laurel is fantastic. She told me that I was talking about what shirt to wear earlier. And you said, oh, that's just psychic. And I went, what? Really? So it took me a while to understand, you know, what I was looking for.
Yeah.
I recall many years ago at an event I went to with you, Bob, and Fran. We were with a bunch of other folks. I believe it was in the Bahamas. And we met along the way somebody else. You were living on Long Island at the time. And this gal was also from Long Island and had been on the same plane ride as us and going to the same retreat. And she was a psychic. And she and I became very close in the few days, but she wondered why you and Fran were not that interested in her psychic abilities. And I said, well, because we're looking for evidence of an afterlife. And she didn't really understand the difference.
Right. Yeah. And there are still mediums that don't understand the difference, you know, because their answer is that all information comes from spirit, even psychic information. So if they tell you that you just painted your bedroom, that information is coming. But my response to them is, okay, I buy that. But then if it's coming from spirit, tell me who it's coming from. You still should be able to do that. So, you know, and a lot of skeptics use the argument, you know, the mediums are just pulling information from the sitter's energy. And in some respects, they're right when the medium is giving psychic information, but not when they're giving specific, you know, evidential information.
I was most moved by an experience I have shared on the radio about taking my mother and my sister to see one of our certified mediums, because they did seem, my mother raised me to believe in all of this, but it did seem that as she got older and maybe closer to the other side, she started to becoming a little more skeptical, as was my sister all along, even though, as I said, we, you know, experimented with table tilting, and we called it table walking growing up. These are all things that we did. And yet they were, well, I could say they were influenced by other members of the family who were not blood related. I'll leave it at that. But I took them to this certified medium, and I got to sit in the living room while they went into the little back parlor room where the meetings were to happen. I could hear everything. And there was evidential things being mentioned, and they were saying, no, no. And I'm in the other room going, yes, but I'm saying nothing. And then at the end, near the very end of the reading, it seemed as though they had brought through Tom's dad. Now, neither of the women were related to Tom's dad, but he's the one who's been had at that point been coming through the most strongest in any situation where we were in the company of a medium. And I heard the medium saying to Mom and my sister, well, I'm hearing the name Kevin. Who's Kevin? And both of them are saying, I don't know. Do you know any Kevin? I don't know any Kevin. And I'm sitting in the living room thinking, that's who my daughter is dating right now. And all along, and my mother then says, after the medium keeps saying this, Kevin, I'm seeing love and marriage, love and marriage. And my mother said, well, who's telling you this? And with that tone, well, who's telling you this? And the medium says, well, he is, the same gentleman that's been bringing through this information. And it was so meaningful to me, because all along, while my daughter was dating Kevin, he was so much, his values and everything about him were so much like Tom's dad, that I truly, and I think I've said this before, I have to write the whole story out, because I truly feel like Tom's dad from the other side brought Kevin and Marin together. And I could go on with even more details supporting that belief, but I won't right now. But it was just funny when my mom and sister then came out of the session and we got back in the car, I said, she asked you about Kevin. That's who my daughter's dating. And my mother goes, oh, she was reading your mind. That was just psychic.
Yeah.
And I wasn't even in the room.
Every time I hear you talk about your childhood, I think back, I'm just concentrating on playing stickball in the street and you're flipping tables. I mean, you had a lot more interesting household than I did.
We had things falling off of the shelves when loved ones passed away and things like that.
It was a question. What are angels? And could they be our loved ones? I think some people think of angels in a religious sense, that they're messengers, for God, it's in a religious context. But from more of a spiritual view, they could be like, we hear the term guardian angels. I mean, they could be loved ones that were once in the physical, and now are watching over us and so being our angel from the other side. Or perhaps they were never embodied, and they would just spend all their time in the spiritual world. I mean, what do you think of when you think of angels? Growing up, I know I always thought of an angel, not that I ever thought about it, but I would think purely from a religious perspective, but not now.
I was just the opposite. And as you know, I'd written a picture book that featured a little angel, Angie the Angel, never from a religious point of view at all. It was just a little helper from the, not living in this physical world. But I have a feeling that people seeing the book or seeing an angel just assumed it had some sort of religious connotation, which I never intended. It was more just a helper.
Yeah.
And the name of that book is?
Dream Job.
Okay.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, I have read books where they claim that an angel is a spirit that never was in the physical. But then, of course, there's so little that we actually know about the afterlife. To try to define something with a definitive answer is really impossible.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have a general term. I mean, there are times you hear stories about somebody whose car breaks down on the side of the road and it's the middle of nowhere, but then all of a sudden somebody shows up with just what is needed to get you back running again. And then it's almost like they come and then they disappear. Mm-hmm. And those have been described as angels who have actually taken physical form to help you. So I think that, well, first of all, the question posed was, could angels be our loved ones who are helping us out? And my answer to that is, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can get help from a never was a physical being that helps you, like your guardian angel or your guide, your spirit guides. I believe that's another one where they figure, well, your spirit guides are beings that were always in spirit and they're trying to help you out. So, okay, that's good. But you also know about, certainly from medium readings, where, you know, the spirit is saying, you know, I'm there at your wedding, or I was there for the birth of your child. I mean, I was holding your child before it came down in the birthing process and that sort of thing. So yeah, your loved ones can do angelic things.
Yeah. Here's a question. By the way, you're listening to The Gathering on Signs of Life Radio. In case you wanted to join into the conversation, the number here is 888-627-6008. Here was a question. My dad suffers from advanced Alzheimer's and is sometimes incoherent. Do you think that he understands me on a subconscious level when I speak to him? You know, my answer would be yes, because the brain apparatus is impaired, but not his mind. And I have personal experience with that. And I probably mentioned it on the show before, but I'll mention it again because it's illustrative of the point. When my son and daughter were in their accident, my son had brain injuries and he was in a coma for a few days. And so he was obviously totally incoherent and comatose. And the father of his girlfriend at the time was sitting at his bedside almost around the clock for like 2-3 days and talking incessantly about anything, just talking and talking and talking. And then finally, after a few days, when John came out of the coma, the very first words he said was he looked at, you know, his girlfriend's father and says, "You are a pain in the ass. You know, don't you ever shut up." So, you know, so he was hearing it, you know, he couldn't communicate it, but on some, you know, his mind was taking in the information. And that's why we always recommend to people, if your loved one is in that kind of a situation, you know, where they're not awake, they're unconscious, or they're in a coma, absolutely, you know, talk to them and tell them how you love them and so forth, because, you know, the mind, their consciousness is still very much operating, even though the interpretive device, the brain, is not there. So,
And that's I have personal knowledge of that as well. My father, right before he passed, he had a massive stroke, and his brain was pretty much gone, and he was just on life support at the time, and not conscious, of course. And I was in the room talking to him, and he would, you know, every once in a while he would shake it when I said something that, you know, to him that was significant. He would shake, but of course he couldn't hear me, but I knew I was getting through and I knew I was being heard. But also, if you read accounts of people with near-death experiences, one in particular where a woman is lying in surgery and she's flatlined. they're pronouncing her dead, but she revived. But during the period where she was clinically dead, she could tell you what the nurses were talking about. She could describe the tools that were over on a shelf. She could even describe things outside the room of the hospital. So yes, you could be clinically dead, but still aware of what's going on in the physical.
And you know, to share something personal, which still I think you feel as badly as I do, Tom, and to anyone listening who thinks, boy, I wish I had talked to my loved one, you know, I didn't know they could hear, because we were taken by surprise when Tom's dad was in this condition and knew he wasn't going to survive and knew that life support to be removed. And all we could do was comfort his mother, Tom's mom, and his dad, once all the tubes were removed, was transported a distance away to, you know, just for whatever remaining time he had. And it, you know, comforting Tom's mom just seemed, you know, 24/7. And it was literally, I think, the day he did pass that we were like, wait up, dad's hasn't passed yet. We have to go be with him. And that was the day he died. So even, you know, knowing it, just, I'm just saying that for any listeners who have any regrets like we do, he came through loud and clear. Even in those moments, you know, before his death, we were gathering and things were happening. So I just share that because everyone, you know, has regrets of some sort, but it doesn't mean our loved ones don't know how much we love them.
And it brings up a good point that it's never too late to tell them how you feel and how you miss them and all that sort of thing, because they hear it. They hear it when you talk to them and talk about them.
True.
Question was, did mediums exist in ancient times? Medium is a relatively new term, new meaning in the last 150 years or so, but mediums always existed. We just didn't call them mediums, right?
Oracles, the Oracle of Delphi,
seers, you know, there were always people. The ancients, you know, regularly communicated with their ancestors through mediums or even on their own. You know, they didn't need third parties, you know. So
that's the key there. It's only recently that society has clamped down on even the thought of doing this so much.
I often think too, just reading memoirs of my grandparents' life back in the early 1920s, 30s. We didn't have the ways to get around. We didn't have the money to get around necessarily, even if we had, you know, could afford the cars and all of that. But life was so much simpler that they had to find smaller local ways to amuse themselves and you know, for gatherings. It probably was quite a commonplace, popular event to have seers bring forth. Maybe it happened more in some church-like settings, but with so much that we have to occupy us now, it's, you know, of course there were seers back then, people communicating, because they didn't have all the other stuff that we have now to occupy us.
Right, exactly. There's a question here. I mean, a lot of people see faces and shapes and clouds, you know, and take them as signs. You know, are they? I can. If the lot of clouds in the sky, and if I stare at clouds, I'll always see something in them. You know, shapes and things. And I mean, my feeling is that clouds are, you know, atmospheric, you know, phenomena. But it's possible. It's not like our loved ones in spirit are manipulating, you know, the molecules, you know, and the air and the water to form these clouds. But they can get us attention to look at the cloud at a specific moment because they see that face or that shape or something that they know. So I think they're drawing our attention to it. And in that case, I guess that could be considered a sign, you know. But like everything else, not everyone is a sign, but some are, right?
Mm-hmm. I know there's one of the Facebook groups that I'm part of now. I was just trying to see on my phone what it was called. It might be something like Proof of an Afterlife, but people are always sharing photos like of clouds or of a scene and go, do you see the face over there? And I just always, I know people want validation, but I think your own feelings should suffice. That's validating enough. If you see it and it makes you think of your loved one, you don't need anybody else to say, oh yeah, I see it too. You know, just trust your own insides.
And it's like the Rorschach test. I mean, it's an ink blot and it opens up and you see something in that ink blot. You know, clouds are the same way. If the cloud goes by and you see something in the cloud, it's real to you. Let's put it that way. Is it real? Well, it's real to you.
I should point out all the swirls that have meaning on our bathroom floor. I swear there's Tom's dad dancing with his mom. And
I can relate to that. Sometimes I'm like, I'll look at wallpaper and I can't understand why people are not seeing the same faces in that wallpaper that I am. But yet, if I asked you to look at it, you wouldn't see it.
Yeah, well, that's just crazy.
Well, I am a bit. Here's a question. I'm having a hard time knowing if dreaming of my loved one is really a visitation or my own subconscious imagination. I thought about this because we always tell people about dream visitations and what they are and how you can differentiate between a true visit versus a regular disjointed dream. But kind of based on my own experience, sometimes I think the line is not that strong. And in other words, what I mean by that is, sometimes I think that I could be having a dream that's clearly a disjointed regular dream. It's kind of all over the place. And in the middle of the dream pops my loved one, you know. Now it could be just for, a few seconds and maybe I wasn't talking to them or touching them. But when I wake up, I knew that they were there. So I think that our loved ones in spirit, when we're in that dream state, even if it's not a pure visitation, they could pop in. You know, they could, in between the, you know, like the chaos, they could, you know, pop in because it's still a channel for them to get through. Does that make any sense?
It does. I can't say I've experienced something like that you've described, but I don't know why that wouldn't happen. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, I've had a couple of dream visitations that I clearly know they were visitations. And I think maybe the word visitation makes it sound like, oh, they're coming for a visit, that you're going to sit and chat with them for 15 minutes or something like that. My visitations were very brief. They fit the description of a pop-in, but they had that vivid quality to them, and the other indication that it's a visitation is that you remember it so vividly after you wake up. Most of the time, I can sort of remember that, oh, I was dreaming about something, but most of my dreams, they go into the ether within 10 minutes of me waking up, except for these visitation dreams, which it's been years. But I still remember them. I could tell you exactly what the surroundings were and how it happened and, you know, what they I think, I don't know if either of them actually talked to me or not, but they were smiling.
I get that. I had one last week, and it was really all over the place, and I was in all sorts of different venues. And I don't know where we were. We were in some sort of a, I don't know whether it was a party or a gathering or whatever, but in the middle of me jumping all over the place, Fran was there, and I didn't think that she was dead. I was, in the moment, we were there together. And then she said something to the effect, I don't remember exactly, but, cause she was moving all over the place. And she said, I love the freedom of being able to fly.
Oh.
And I'm like, I woke up and I knew I forgot almost all of the dream, mm-hmm. Except for that. I said, wait a second, that can't be just a coincidence. Cause what do we say about once you're on the other side, you have no body and you're able to move about, just by thought. So I kind of think that's an example of what I was talking about, like a pop in into my regular dream. So
amazing. I wrote it down, Bob. So then we'll know if it's a true dream visit of some sort when I say, ask you about it, the next time we're together, and I'll say, what's that dream again? And if you say, I don't know.
I'll probably remember that one.
Yeah, I think so. I remember the first dream visit I ever really recall is Tom's dad coming to me and saying, I need your help. And I think it was for communication, because at the time when he passed, Tom was like you, Bob, still, skeptical and can this really be real and all of that, where I was all in. And I felt like he was asking me for my help to help him make himself known. And that's still just as clear. And he passed in 2003. So 20 years.
20 years. Wow.
Here's something I've heard this before, that it does bother some people. It says, I sometimes have dreams that come true. And when they're about other people, especially if they are bad things, I feel guilty as if somehow I caused it to happen. What do you think? So in other words, you have a dream that something bad's going to happen to somebody, and then it does happen. And so the person that had that dream thinks that somehow their thoughts caused the event to happen.
I would wonder, I don't know if they have any other unique abilities, but it often, a little bit of it sounds like what we've often read in some of the books the mediums have written, that, early on, before they really identified what their abilities were, these kind of troublesome things happened, and they felt like they didn't even want to share it because it sounded like people might think they caused it or they would think it. But if they're listening, whoever wrote that.
Yeah, I have the – I always had a theory that, if you're lying in a pool and like a – floaty toy or something is being pushed towards you, and you're looking up at the sky, but you all of a sudden you feel the wake of what's coming, and before it gets to you, and then it hits you. And, oh, that was a pool float that just hit me in the head. But ahead of that, you've sensed by the wave of water. So I think that in a dream, you're basically floating in non-physical, and that, yes, major events are coming and you're feeling the wave of them by actually anticipating events. I've had two precognitive dreams that were very vivid, and then one I was... I had been living in Nashville, and I came home for the holidays, and I was going to go fly back to Nashville to work the New Year's Eve shift at the restaurant that I was working at. And I had this dream that I was getting on the airplane to go back, and the airplane was like struggling to get up. And then all of a sudden there was a bridge there, and it was going to hit the bridge. And I woke up before it actually happened, but I was terrified, thinking, oh my gosh, maybe I shouldn't fly back to Nashville. But then there was a news story about a plane outside of Washington, D.C. that was trying to take off, and it had ice on the wings or something, and it couldn't get off, and it hit a bridge in the Potomac River. And so I figured, well, that was my dream. And then another one, even more specific than that, which happened this month, early in the month, probably about August 10th or so, I was, remember, walking kind of like St. Mark's Place in Manhattan, where sometimes you have in Manhattan, you're on the sidewalk, and then there are steps down to a cafe or something like that. And I walked by one of those, stepped down, and noticed it was all filled with flowers. And so I walked over to it, and I saw the flowers were surrounding a white casket. Ooh. And somebody was walking by, and so I turned to him. I said, well, this is a pretty public place for a funeral. I said, who's in the casket? And they said, Elvis Presley. And a week later, he died and was buried in a white casket in a very public display. And other explanation, but I saw it coming.
So there's an example. I mean, so it would be, to me, it would be, wouldn't be logical to believe that Tom having that precognitive dream put the thought out there and caused Elvis Presley's death. I think quite the opposite. Some people, maybe we all do to some degree, catch glimpses of future events that may or may not happen, you know. But I could see where the fear comes from, because we read all these books about manifesting good and putting thoughts out there and attracting like, you know. So a lot of people are fearful that if they put a thought out there that's harmful or evil, that could also attract, you know, evil. But I don't necessarily think that applies to these precognitive moments. You know, I can't see.
I don't think so.
No.
I want to use Tom's story about the white casket as a segue. My mother, who was president of Long Island's Memorial Society, she was a little bit outraged by the way funeral parlors take advantage of loved ones' grief and upsell all the things. I was happy to see Costco is now selling caskets.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
So I need like 2 pounds of chicken and a can.
They come in colors. And
yep. The only trouble is you have to buy them in bulk.
Yeah. A six pack.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, I guess it makes sense, right? Here's a question that obviously is conjecture on our part, but do people in the afterlife see our futures? And that's kind of in line with what we were just talking about. I mean, some people here can see future events, and I would imagine that some people there can see future events. But I don't think that everybody in the afterlife knows everything that's going to happen. And that, I don't believe that.
Although, I mean, there are two things that we worship here in the physical that are totally meaningless in the afterlife. One is money, and the other is time. Time for us is linear. Time on the other side is not. So you can... if you want to, you can go visit the 1700s, or you can visit the the 2323 or something like that. So I suppose if you want to know how things are going to turn out for your loved ones, that yeah, you could go 10 years into the future and see how they're doing. I think there's a rule or a law or whatever that you do not interfere. You can, right. You can observe these things and maybe, you know, help out in some kind of ways, but everybody who comes to the physical world has, well, they call it a soul contract or something. Your spirit knows that when you get into this physical world, you've got 15 years, you've got 29 years, you've got 80 years, you've got 100. Your spirit knows that you've signed up for that, and that you, in that time, you're going to accomplish something. And for spirit on the other side, who knows how many years you're signed up for, you know, especially for children and young people, that, you know, well, they're going to pass at 19 years old. I gotta stop that. I gotta warn them or you know, try to make that not happen. But they signed up for that, and for whatever reason that we have yet to understand or even accept in a lot of these cases, that's their time. And when they go, they were supposed to go. You know, for people who have lost somebody close to them at a young age prematurely, and you feel horrible, of course, but you're feeling horrible for yourself. If you really should feel happy for the one who's crossed, because they're living a much better existence on the other side, believe me, than we are here. That's the report we get back, that it's beautiful there, as you were talking before. I love it that I can just go flying. Mm-hmm. My dad was saying, oh, this is great. Everything, you know, goes super fast. I'm going to go out on a jet ski and see, you know, in one reading that Melissa got, he said, you see that guy on the jet ski there? I'm going out there, and I'm going to ride around with him all day. He'll never even know I'm there, you know. So that's, it sounds like it's not a somber, sad, melancholy place on the other side. It's beautiful. It's exciting. It's a lot of energy, a lot of love, a lot of joy.
And the best news is we're all going to be there someday.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, this other question is kind of related to that. It's, you know, here free will often results in us making mistakes. If free will continues on the other side, do they also make mistakes that can hurt them or hurt others? And I think the answer is that we think of mistakes, as you alluded to, Tom, differently here than they do there. You know, here a mistake maybe the result of ego or material stuff or greed, but their mistakes are just a learning process where it's more about love, you know. So I think that mistakes are a physical term. You know, learning is more of an apt term where they are.
Right? Yeah, I agree with that totally. And part of the evidence is that is how many times I've seen a reading where the spirit comes through and first of all, the sitter goes, well, I don't want to hear from that bastard, you know, but the spirit is coming through to apologize for being that bastard. That when you get to the other side, you have a better understanding of compassion and love.
Yeah. Here's a practical question. How many readings does the average medium do per week? You know, that varies drastically from medium to medium. I know mediums that only do 2 or 3 readings per week. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of surprised. I was talking with one of the mediums that was at our recent grief retreat, and she told me that she did sometimes 5 to 7 readings per day, or every day. You know, so that would, you do the math, and that may be like, you know, 40, you know, readings a week. So, and, you know, a lot of mediums also tell us that they're physically drained, you know, after doing an evidential reading. So, and others can practice mediumship at a high level and do many multiples. So I don't know. I don't know, you know, how or why, but it certainly does vary, you know.
Does it make you wonder if that may be the reason that some very talented mediums that we know no longer do choose to do the, you know, don't schedule readings any longer, that it's just so draining, and, you know, they still have the ability, but it's not good for them.
Yeah. Well, you listen, mediums tell us, and we see it, that they're very empathic. So when they're telling you the mode of passing, when they're giving you evidence, they'll say things like, "I feel it in my chest," or "My head, you know, hurts." There was a medium that was going through the evaluation process tonight, as a matter of fact, just before the radio show. And the medium said to the sitter, "My head is pounding. I don't know why." When referring to the sitter's dad, and then the sitter, which she probably shouldn't have done, volunteered that yes, her dad took his own life by, you know, shooting himself in the head. So these things must take a physical toll on the medium if the medium is good at what they do. Yeah. And that could result in an accumulation over the years, because we find, like you said, Melissa, a lot of mediums, as the years go by and they've done more and more and more readings, it seems to affect them more. And I think that maybe that has to do with all the accumulation of all this pounding that they're taking physically and emotionally. Now, on the other hand, of course, some mediums just get lazy and they don't want to do readings anymore, but I can certainly understand the physical aspect of it, right?
Well, you know, in answering that question about how many, and you say, well, some mediums will do 5 or 7 a day. You know, our grief retreat, our mediums are doing 17 people 3 times in 1 weekend.
If spirit comes through for all of them, but yeah, that's a lot. Yeah,
that's true.
So, you know, every medium has their own threshold. You know, we don't know the reason to that. We don't have much time left, and some of these questions are involved. You know, I think we touched on this before. Do those in the afterlife try to influence our world to make it better? And I think, like as Tom mentioned, you know, they, not on a big macro level, but they can do certain little things to try to help us or guide us or give us inspiration. But I don't think they're preventing things like atrocities and wars and, you know, natural disasters, you know, but they do what they can to help their loved ones on this side, you know, individually. But also, as you mentioned, there's what's going to happen is going to happen, and they're not going to be able to change it. So,
yeah, and it's funny that reading, a daily reading that I do every day's message is different. And today's was all about things unfold exactly as they are meant to, even if we don't understand it at the time. It's right. All in perfect order.
All right. Well, I think our time is up. We'll read Dr. Claude Swanson's Global Peace Prayer. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment.
And I would like to say our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.